Welcome to 105 The Ticket's video game podcast from Cold Omaha. I'm Tom Schar. He's Max Hamilton. We got a great show for you today. We'll discuss the top five games of 2014 and the biggest disappointments, plus debate the pros and cons of microtransactions. But first, we start with news right out of the most recent Microsoft press conference. What do we got today?
Yeah, well, Microsoft kind of came out of the gate with some big surprises. They got some competition for Apple's phone Siri. We're going to now get, any Microsoft fans are going to have an AI system for Cortana. Cortana is actually going to be the voice of Microsoft's platform on all computers and
I mean, it's a smart way
consoles,
to, yeah, it's a smart way to leverage a familiar voice, right? With obviously a popular video game. I mean, Halo, you don't have to be a video games person to understand what Halo is, or at least have heard of it.
Oh, absolutely not. And some people have already joked that it's going to be pretty advanced. And I don't know if you've seen the movie Her, where Joaquin Phoenix falls in love with a smartphone, but there's some predictions that that's going to be happening with Microsoft and Cortana now.
I'm not saying Papa Mel, but we may know someone who might fall in love with their phone.
He's already got it pre-ordered. But I mean, you can see the progression where this is probably going to pop up on the Xbox interface.
Yep.
With this, it's going to be a part of their Windows 10 platform. And some cool news for, I believe it's Windows 8 users and anything since, they're going to be able to upgrade for free, which is nice. This will tie in with their gaming because you're going to be able to stream it to any platform. So
yeah.
Any Xbox One game, you can put it on your computer, your tablet, phone, whatever.
It's like a power move, right? I mean, Microsoft has to compete with Apple. They have to compete with Sony. And I mean, at this point, there are exclusive games still, but it's not really like the N64, you know, PlayStation era. I mean, it seems like most games come out on both platforms. And most people now, I mean, I feel like a lot of people are buying Apple products. And I think they kind of, this is a power move, right? You can put all your games on one spot. This is a familiar voice, you know, kind of a smart move by Microsoft in my mind.
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing is, you know, once I switch to Apple and, you know, iPods and iPhones and things like that, I'm never going to switch back. I'm happy with my iPhone. Windows, you know, their phone kind of flopped, and it's got some strong fan base, but it's not going to ever beat out Apple. And also, you know, with Microsoft's Kinect, that it already got disconnected from the Xbox One. It wasn't a huge hit with the 360, and they just keep taking bits and pieces away that the public doesn't like and try it with new things.
I was going to ask about that real quick. For me, I actually like Kinect. I like not having to have a headset. Now, some people obviously have nice, fancy ones, right? Surround sound, better
yep,
voice.
Yep.
But I kind of like being able to sit in my room and just talk. Like, you know, when we were playing Xbox Live, it's like we were sitting right next to each other. Wags out in Fresno. I can, you know, talk to him. interesting kid. Maybe we have to have him on. I don't know how he'll do. But I actually miss Kinect. I don't use it a ton. But I kind of am bummed that I thought that was kind of the next generation thing, and it seems like they're actually moving back, right? It's not even included in most bundles now.
Yeah, it is now a standalone purchase, and having got it, you know, day one with that $500 purchase set, I don't regret having the Kinect, but
yeah.
You know, now that it's unbundled, would I have gotten it? Probably not. It's too bad that they gutted it so soon into the life of the Xbox One, because there's not going to be any development for it.
That's my question. I mean, I feel like most games, I suppose there's Just Dance, and there was the Fantasia game that based on it.
Right.
But I don't even use it as much in gaming as I just like the convenience of not having a headset on. Being able, I mean, someone walks in the room and I'd be like, hey, you can talk to this embodied voice. That was my roommate. You know what I mean?
My only thing with it is that it would always recognize everyone but me, and half the things
yes.
I said it wouldn't listen to. And updates have fixed that. But, you know, it just... By them unbundling it, it eliminated a big chunk of users for any developer to consider making a Kinect-only game or significant Kinect support.
Yeah, so. I mean, it's just weird. We go back to kind of tying this in with the first topic. I mean, that's what separated it from Sony. And now it just seems like I'm going to be curious. What is it, The Last of Us? Is it a game like that or Sunset Overdrive that kind of drive people one way or the other? Is it simply your loyalty? You're a PS3 user? You're an Xbox 360 user? Or what? What's going to differentiate the two systems? And maybe it's just this, that the PC is going to be kind of compatible with an Xbox.
Right. Well, I think at the end of the day, it's just going to come down to what games they have to offer. And, you know, it's going to be those exclusives that get people to buy one console over the other. But also, you know, we're not looking at – when the PS3 launched, we had a price point of $600. And that eliminated a lot of people, and everyone went right to Microsoft. But now you're talking – you know, a couple $100 for a Wii U and $350 for the Xbox, and people are going to be picking up multiple systems. So it's not a huge concern for the developers and the publishers anymore.
All right. Anything else out of the press conference?
Yeah, actually, the biggest surprise that Microsoft caught a lot of people off guard with, they debuted a virtual or an augmented reality headset.
Yeah.
So this is going to be a little competition for the Oculus, and I know Sony's working on a virtual reality as well. This one's going to work with kind of holograms and projecting that in front of you, and you'll be able to work with your computer, maybe the console, I'm assuming, someday, and basically just do everything from this virtual, or excuse me, augmented reality headset. Also pretty cool, but it's still pretty, far off futuristic tech, and Microsoft's been struggling with the Kinect when they tried selling us on that, so we'll have to see what they do with selling us on the augmented reality now.
I feel like people talk about Star Trek and how we use Star Trek technology in today's world. This is one of those things, since Star Trek or Star Wars or anything, you feel like, you know, eventually like arrived in the future. Does that make sense? I mean, it just seems like this is something that's been a part of sci-fi movies forever. And I'd be curious, like, how close we get to that, because I feel like that's the one kind of frontier, if you will, that we really haven't breached. We have cell phones. We have all sorts of different kind of technology. But holograms obviously aren't commonplace right now.
Right. Yeah, no. And it's cool to just kind of be watching all this stuff come out, starting with some of the Oculus Rift demos. I know for a fact that I'm going to pick one up as soon as it's available, because it's just got some cool tech to show off and play around with. And if you're feeling adventurous, you can go get a developer kit right now for $350 and try to figure out what you're doing with it. But we're going to be seeing some pretty high tech and affordable technology coming out in the next few years.
I wonder how it'll be used in gaming, because certain ones I could see, like Diablo or anything that's overhead like that, being implemented pretty soon. Like, you could probably see the 3D dimensions and move the guys around or something like that, or certainly a strategy game like that. But I wonder, like, how it would be implemented in a video game outside of that.
I think the biggest thing with the Oculus, at least, is going to just be immersion. It's not going to be you controlling it differently other than some head movements and motion tracking. But really, it's just about that immersion. It's going to be surround sound, 360 degrees of view, just exploring and feeling like you're actually a part of something. And the biggest challenge for them to deal with right now is the motion sickness, because until you have used it a lot and gotten used to it, it's making people sick and pass out and throw up. And they obviously can't release that to the public until they've got that sorted out. It's just a lawsuit waiting to happen.
Yeah, absolutely. Anything else we need to know about this press conference?
No, I mean, that pretty much hit the highlights of it. And obviously, there's going to be more to come. I'm sure Microsoft will have some more stuff to show off at E3.
All right, in our next topic, we're going to discuss the top 5 video games of 2014, as well as ones that disappointed us. Welcome back. In this segment, Max and I discuss our top 5 games of 2014. For me, at least, Max, I think it was tough at the top. You said yours isn't necessarily even in order. These are just your 5 favorite games. I tried to put them in order, but they're all very different. And I think at the end of the day, it was a good year, considering kind of it was 2 systems competing at once, almost kind of, Microsoft 360, Xbox One, PS3, PS4, and a lot of kind of remastered games. I mean, I definitely, 3 of my top 5 are games I've played before.
Yeah, absolutely. And those remastered games are helping fill the library, especially during the first few months when there really wasn't anything coming out. But once we hit fall, there was AAA title after AAA title, and I don't think anyone's complaining about a lack of things to play now. And, my backlog certainly has grown quite a bit. But one interesting thing is, there were a few games that everyone's been talking about all year long. And the deal with these is, it was kind of a mediocre year as far as what was released, but the ones that everyone's calling game of the year, they had a lot of big flaws, and they might not have been highly praised if they were a little more polished and their competition was as well.
Well, yeah, it was just a weird year in the sense that it was hard to find a number one game. It was even Dragon Age, which I think a lot of people, when it came out, people were like, this is a game of the year candidate. They found flaws in the game, certainly within Assassin's Creed, which we'll talk about more in the microtransactions section. It came out kind of as it was a completely flawed game. It was a game that if you don't have online services, you'd be kind of bummed out.
Right. As far as transferring, your old save data and all that stuff. And the thing with Inquisition is, it's a perfect example of a great game, but their characters and the writing, it's not the best that BioWare has ever produced, but it's still a great game. And they talk about how much time you can sink into it and all the content. Well, a lot of that content was just grinding away and trying to find things and collect things, and it's really not adding to your overall enjoyment of the game. It's just kind of there, and you have to do it.
Yeah, my thought process on that is, first of all, I did like the characters in Dragon Age, and I'm not even that deep into it. It was one of those games when I started playing, I was like, I want it to last almost a full year. Like, I really want to immerse myself into it, and I don't want to rush through it. But what a game has to do well then is that they have to create a good environment because if you don't have that, it's not worth your time. You know, we're all busy. It's not worth your time going and searching for something on the far reaches of the map or something like that.
Yeah, absolutely. And the older you get, the more you notice that, the less free time you have to spend grinding away in games or just doing something that you're not actually enjoying. So, you know, I have no problem walking away from a game I paid full price for and just moving on to the next one if they're not holding my attention.
I mean, the way I see that and the ways games are sold now, I mean, if I walk away from a game full price, they got to do something great with the next kind of game they come out with, whether it's in the series, they're the same company, for me to even kind of take interest in it. Now, there's a lot of time for hype, and there's a lot of time to kind of change your mind on that. But the flip side is I can buy a $5 game. You know, I think of like The Witcher. You know, that was a game that I wasn't really in tune to right away. It was kind of off my radar screen, went and bought it for probably $5, $10, $15. I don't remember what it was. But I'll probably pick up The Witcher 3 just because it was a great series, and I think that you see now what they're selling. They're selling, you know, Skyrim. They're selling The Witcher. They're selling kind of these games that are part of series at a cheap price point. It's a brilliant strategy because I think now people are going to go pick up the next game in that series for full price.
Yeah, and, you know, Xbox's Games with Gold programs drawn a lot of people's attention to some of this. I mean, Witcher 2 was one of the free games a month or two ago, and that's something that totally got underexposed when it came out.
Well, and like Dishonored. I mean, Dishonored was a game, you know, we talked about this. You're like, you have to play this, and I completely thought it was a different kind of game. Fallout was a little bit like that too, where that, you know, I was like, is it a survival horror? I think with Fallout, I was worried about kind of the size of the game, how long it was. But that's a game that I love. I'm still playing that now. I'm playing the DLC and kind of playing through that. And that was released in 2008. And I think Dishonored was maybe 2011. I can't remember the date.
Yeah, it was a couple years ago, maybe started 2012.
Okay, yeah. And it was one of those games where, you know, like Bioshock was another one you talked me into. One of my favorite games of the year. We can maybe do that in another podcast, talk about our favorite games kind of from the last generation.
Yep.
That definitely was one of them. And I feel like Dishonored kind of played like that. And certainly in terms of storytelling or whatever, I felt like it matched. And it was such a great environment. I never would have played that game if it wasn't free, I'll be honest with you. And I think that whenever the next one comes out or whenever Bethesda comes out with another game, I'm definitely going to be, you know, looking to purchase that game, obviously.
Yeah, no, they definitely know what they're doing. But as far as, like, the top five, what do you got on your list?
Yeah, I'm going to start with Sunset Overdrive. I liked it. I don't know where to, you know, where to rank it. If you were going to go 1 to 10, I'd say, like, 8, 8.5. It was a really fun game. It's not one where, if it's a 9, I feel like it's a must-buy. If it's 10, it's kind of a trendsetter, right? Games will be kind of made like that from here on out.
Kind of like Skyrim when that came out and it got such rave reviews. Now all these games are trying to, you know, emulated a little bit with Dragon Age. Certainly was kind of gunning for that after the poor reception of Dragon Age 2 and, you know,
and
Fallout.
And Grand Theft Auto 4 was like that. A lot of games kind of were like long form, kind of took, you know, the open world sandbox to the next level.
Right.
Sunset Overdrive, I wouldn't say is like that, but it's very well executed. It's very unique. And I think
it's a very good open world game.
Yeah, it's a good open world game. And I think more than anything, I like that you create your own character and then they put you in a great world. I can't think of another game that's designed kind of with those colors and kind of that graphics and the text they have. That's really what enticed me about this game. And I really, really have enjoyed it to this point.
Yeah, you know, you hear a lot of people talking about some of their previous work, like Resistance, and how it was just gloomy, and it just wasn't really what the company was known for. And then they came back and did this game where it was just everything that they were all about, colorful and crazy and just out there. And it really created a really fun experience and got, you know, maybe not any consoles sold, but it certainly was well received.
Yeah, and maybe if that was the goal, I don't think that it worked out that way. It's not a Halo or whatever, but I think that at the end of the day, I think you can make a purchase like this, and the humor is great. It's well executed. It's a fun world. In general, I was pretty happy with Sunset Overdrive.
Yeah, and I have it still playing through it, but didn't make my top five, but it's something I definitely plan on sticking with and following all the way through to the end of it. My top five, I did have Inquisition on it. We've already talked about that, though. So I'll go next with Shadow of Mordor. That was a game that kind of came out of nowhere. A lot of people weren't expecting a new Lord of the Rings game, especially like that. But it took from its two inspirations, Assassin's Creed and Batman, the Arkham series. And I think it did what both those games do even better and just combined it perfectly. The combat's great. It's tight. The graphics look really great. And with the assassin stuff, you're climbing things, scaling much faster than you would in Assassin's Creed, but also stalking, and it's got the stealth down. You know, if Assassin's Creed could go and do what Shadow of Mordor did with a more updated combat and just a more fluid game, it would be back on the top of its game. But yeah, Shadow of Mordor, the only complaint I had was it was a little empty, and the story wasn't as gripping. It's pretty brutal, too. But yeah, at the end of the day, it was a great game, and that Nemesis system is something else. It redid.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. Do you think that, if you're going to talk about an element that's maybe trendsetting, is that something you see appearing more and more kind of in different video games?
From what I've understood and read, it took them quite a while to develop that system and a lot of trial and error. But I even, you know, read a joking article about how they should license that out to other games, that it would completely rejuvenate it and personalize it to the gamer, and your story changes based on how you interact with those people. But yeah, it wouldn't have been the same game without that. And I believe that the 360 version, if that is out now, I believe it is, was not able to ship with that Nemesis system. It just, the old generation just couldn't handle that.
Well, and it seems like what 360 really did is allowed a lot of games to, you could control the narrative. It no longer told you a story. And if it did, it was like Bioshock Infinite, where, you know, it was really well told and it had to be orchestrated in the order it was.
Right.
But the thing with Mass Effect and Dragon Age and a lot of games like that is that you controlled your outcome. And in some ways, this isn't changing the storytelling, maybe, but it is a narrative in the game. And what I like about it is, like I said, I think forever, enemies, you think of a Duke Nukem game, right? You don't think through who the enemies are. You just plow over as many as you can, right?
Absolutely.
This, I think, is fun just because it gives some personality and character to the people you're interacting with in the environment. So I hope this is something, even if it's not, you know, exactly executed like it was in Shadow of Mordor, it's implemented into more games.
And I can guarantee you that there's going to be a sequel to that game, and they're going to keep the Nemesis system and probably have it evolve. And, you know, when they first started with it, it was even much more complex than it ended up being. It got very detailed, and there were different factions of enemies, and they had, I believe, some sort of morality or standing with them that would also determine how you interacted with them throughout the rest of the game. But the end product I thought was great, and I'm excited to see where it goes from there.
All right, my number four game is Tomb Raider, going back to a game actually that has just a standard storyline. I really liked the first one, and more than anything, my disc reader on my 360 has died. So I was like, you know what, this is a game I like. It's definitely worth playing again. Lara Croft is a great character. I think it's great environments. In my mind, if games are going to be telling a story and not allow you to control the narrative, you have to execute it like this, because I think that you have to have this storyline and kind of, I always felt compelled to kind of figure out what's next, and I almost had trouble putting it down just because it's so well told.
Right. It was a very tightly woven story. It fit well. The reboot was great. My only complaint with that game was some of the exploration, especially the temple sections where you just had to get through something. It wasn't terribly hard or very large or fleshed out. But no, it was a great game. I'm looking forward to the sequel, that Xbox exclusive, I believe, for a month or a year. Rise of the Tomb Raider. So
yeah, that's one series that I think I don't know if you want to call it a reboot or what it was. They've continued to put out good games, and like I said, even if it's the $10 games or whatever that's come out on the marketplace,
right?
I think they've
done Temple of Osiris, I think, was the latest.
Yeah. I think that they did a good job branding that game, and I think that this game really helped kind of, I don't want to say put Tomb Raider back on the map, but remind you that this is going to be a series that's going to continue into the next generation.
Right. It certainly reintroduced it to an audience that probably never considered it before.
Yeah.
And they made her, I'd say, a stronger character or more relatable, a little more realistic.
Yeah. So. Yeah, exactly.
Next on my list, this one surprised a lot of people. I think a lot of press and initial players of it thought it was just going to flop, but Wolfenstein, The New Order, came out of nowhere with kind of a very emotional, hard-hitting story at times. The gunplay was tight. It was great. It was Wolfenstein at its core, but throughout the game, you know, there's all these little twists and touches of, you know, human elements and everything, and I think it just was surprising for a Wolfenstein game. I mean, the last one wasn't a huge hit, and it's a series that people have been wanting to see come back for a while now, and I think it just hit it out of the park with that.
Yeah, it was a bold move, right? I mean, you have Wolfenstein kind of the brand, and obviously someone, you know, developing that game said, hey, we need a storyline. We actually need a human touch to this. You feel like it's one of those things where they kind of had a hit home run just because they're trying to bring that brand into the next generation, kind of like Tomb Raider, and then they had to make the story good, otherwise people probably would have been disappointed kind of in the series as a whole, right? Depending on how the
game went. And it was nice, you know, they could do whatever they wanted because they had that fresh take where it's set in an alternate reality. What happens if the U.S. lost World War II, Nazis take over, come to the U.S. and go from there? But, I mean, who doesn't like killing Nazis and all their video games? They left out the zombies, thankfully, this time. But there were some fun set-piece moments, some train wrecks, space, moon-based shootout. You know, they hit all the top notes. And, you know, I think we're going to see some more Wolfenstein in the near future.
Yeah, absolutely. So we number three I had was Dragon Age. We talked about it a little bit. I just say their success is going to be in how well they develop those characters and how well they develop the environments. I mean, I think if you have a Dragon Age game, you know you're investing a lot of time in it, and they have a lot of competition, obviously, with Skyrim and with other games kind of set in that same era. But in general, I was very happy with this game. The thing I was disappointed with was just the origin system, and just I had trouble translating. In fact, I wasn't able to translate my progress from 360 to this game. I think at the end of the day, if you're someone who's new to this, hopefully you're able to kind of understand. I feel like I'd have trouble understanding what's going on in Dragon Age if I hadn't played 1 and 2, and I think that's maybe the biggest shortcoming with this game is that it's really hard to kind of introduce a new, you know, Dragon Age player with Inquisition, no matter how great the gameplay is.
It is. I played the other two and all the DLC and everything like that twice each, actually, and I still get lost in Dragon Age 3 because there's so much going on in it, and just all the side quests, and a lot of it, you know, requires you to read the little booklets that pop up every time you pick something up, or just, you know, check online to see what else is going on with the lore, and you can get lost in it pretty easily.
Yeah, it's like a really well-told story, but it's almost as though someone dropped like a 1,000-page book on you and say, hey, start at, you know, page 500.
Right.
Basically.
Right.
Do you want to say number three? Have you said that yet?
Well, yeah, I guess I'll go on to my fourth pick. This is an exact copy almost of Far Cry 3. I'm going to go with Far Cry 4, but it's a fresh paint job. Added some new guns and locations and all that and everything. But really what they did was they just perfected something that was pretty good before, and now it's just at the top of its game.
Yeah, I think the hardest thing for that is 2 was an innovative game, but you couldn't get through it, right? They had a lot of going on that was kind of new and fresh.
Right, but there was a lot of frustrating stuff, like the malaria and the guns that would break down almost instantly and just...
Yeah.
It was a struggle fest.
One, you could set things on fire and then burn your own car down or something like that. Yeah, it was a little frustrating with that stuff. I just think that they perfected 3. It was a great game. You know, again, one of those linear games that was really well told. And I think that the gameplay was awesome. I think the hardest thing with 4 is that it's almost unrealistic to think that you're going to take the jump from 2 to 3 and replicate it with 3 to 4, right?
Right. And, you know, the jump from 2 to 3 was huge. 3 to 4, there was only so much they could improve upon other than a different location. And they're already talking about what they're going to do with the next game. They've sent out surveys asking, you know, would you like to see this back in Africa? You know, maybe Australia, sort of a Western game, maybe in the future. Obviously, we had Blood Dragon, which was awesome, but they said that there's not going to be a sequel to Blood Dragon at this time. You know, we're still waiting for the rest of the season pass to come out, the DLC. I know there's going to be a survival mode where you try to survive against a Yeti at night and build a fort during the day and things like that. But yeah, we'll see where they go next with the series. It's great. It works. Just as long as they keep updating the setting, I think people are going to keep playing it.
We'll touch on Blood Dragon in a second, but was there a problem with you? I don't know how far you are into it, but a lot of people are saying that the main enemy doesn't show up much. It's like they introduce him and then you kind of play through and then see him later. Is that a problem for you?
So, well, Ubisoft has this deal with a lot of their games where the map is just filled with collectibles and side quests and things like that. And when you go around collecting all this stuff, it takes you away from the main story for so long that you really don't get to know these main characters or see the protagonists or the antagonists very often. You're just kind of out there exploring the world. Now, the thing that they do really well with Far Cry 4 is that these collectibles, every single one you go after, leads you to a very cool handcrafted area. So it's, you know, you feel like you're actually exploring, not just running somewhere to pick something up.
Yeah, which is really important, as we said earlier.
Right. Their game that struggles with this, I think, is games like Assassin's Creed, where you're literally just running around picking up things for the sake of having to pick them up. I mean, Black Flag, which is actually a fresh change in the series, Which probably my favorite Assassin's Creed. That had you sailing to random islands in the middle of the ocean just to get a little fragment and then get back on your boat.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was a time killer for the sake of having something to do.
Yeah, I feel like that's a series that's going to have to reboot itself a little bit. Because I used to buy Assassin's Creed without even looking at reviews. Now I'm going to be kind of curious what they do.
And, you know, I went into that with Unity. I bought into the whole, you know, we've changed combat and it's going to look great. And, I mean, it's been patch after patch and it's still broken. I'm still falling through the ground in the game and having it. You know, just freeze up and audio stop and all sorts of problems.
We'll talk about that in microtransactions, but I do want to talk about Blood Dragon before I forget. I thought that's one that I'd almost buy that as a standalone game.
Well, I mean, Blood Dragon was technically a standalone. You didn't need the base game. I think it was Xbox Arcade that and it came out on PlayStation 2. But
I just, in my mind, you maybe don't want a game as long as Far Cry 4 the Blood Dragon, but I'm disappointed that they didn't have a sequel. I actually thought it was a really fun game. I thought that it was a unique environment, and I thought it was just a nice twist. Like, they don't take themselves that seriously. We can, you know, kind of bring this retro environment to a rather serious storyline or whatever they had with Far Cry 3.
Yeah, and it was a nice change after kind of some of the disappointed reviews that the Far Cry 3 story basically received. But no, for a one-off little, you know, basically a downloadable game arcade title, it was great. It was a lot of fun. The humor was spot on. I think it was something that the series needed.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're going to go on to, Diablo 3 was the Reaper Souls edition was my, number two game. Again, a game that I think we had played on Diablo 3 straight up on Xbox. And when you were talking about it, you're like, hey, it's a fun game. But they got to work on this. And I don't want to say it's broken like Unity was, but they definitely didn't have kind of the loot system down. And I really think that they got that down in this game. And this is one that I think, because they allow you to create multiple characters, I'm going to be playing over and over again for sure.
Yeah, well, that game came out in 2012 originally for the PC. And when it came out for the PC, it was just broken. The loot was bad. What did they call it? The real life auction house, but you know, you could use cash to buy and sell items and all that. It was just getting exploited, and they got rid of that, and they just turned everything around and brought an expansion, new character, changed the whole loot system, loot 2.0, and it, you know, it's a great game, totally different than what it was when it launched, and it just kind of gives hope for some of those games. I don't know that Unity can do this, but you know, there's hope that if you turn your game around, you're gonna have a hit.
Well, yeah, and it was a great example of kind of don't give up on the product that they had, because Diablo's been around. It seems like since the beginning of time, it obviously had a really good rep. Blizzard had a good rep. And I think that I don't hold it against Blizzard that it came out wrong. What I like is that they did it right and they kind of figured it out. And like I said, this is a game, especially because the multiplayer, I think, is so well done that I'm going to be playing for a long, long time.
Right. And the difference there is, you know, at least Blizzard released a finished product for the most part. It wasn't as fun as it should have been, but it was finished. You know, these other games trying to hit these annual release marks, it's unfinished. It's not fun. It's full of glitches, and they just treat the consumer like, hey, you know, this is your problem to find, and we'll fix it once it's found.
Yeah, exactly. And I think this is actually a very consumer-friendly game, even from the standpoint of you can have characters at different levels, and they somehow even out the enemies. I mean, little touches like that I think are difficult to program, but definitely worth doing.
No, absolutely. We'll go on to my number one game for 2014. This is actually kind of a game that's not on many people's radar, but I definitely spent the most time playing. This is Hearthstone, another Blizzard game that, they just hit it out of the park with this. It's a free-to-play game. You can download it on your PC. It's coming to iPhones and all that, but it's on tablets now. And it is a collectible card game. And basically, I mean, think in the vein of Magic or Pokemon or something like that. And, you know, it's usually with this stuff, it's pretty complicated and there's a high barrier to entry and it's confusing. But they just nailed it. There's a single player mode. Collecting the cards is fun. The tutorial just gets you right to where you need to be. It's an easy to play game, difficult to master. And, you know, if you give it a shot for an hour or so, you're going to be coming back day after day. And it's just well paced. As far as microtransactions, even, you know, it's got them in the forms of card packs. But other than that, you know, there's no money to just be blowing on just silly things like cosmetics needlessly. And every single thing that you can get in the game through money, you can earn just by some hard work and playing well.
Is the best part of this maybe the barrier in entry, just that people have tablets, it's free, and it's
yeah, you know what? As soon as it's on the phone, I'm going to be playing it all the time. Right now, just because I have a Nook, which isn't thought of as the go-to tablet, but once Barnes & Noble and Google kind of teamed up and made it into a little Android tablet, you can download stuff on there. And unfortunately, it's not high-tech enough to run Hearthstone. But right now, yeah, I'll play on the computer every now and then. But as soon as it's on the phone, it's going to be hitting a wide audience. And I think that people will be kind of curious to see what it's like. And it's addicting.
What was your introduction into this? Because to my knowledge, you're not like a huge Warcraft guy.
No, absolutely. never played World of Warcraft. Never got into the MMO scene, really. But I just, you know, it starts with just you hearing the name and then article after article talking about it. And really Game Informer had an obsession with it, and they probably still do the way the game is like. But yeah, I mean, you just hear about it, check it out, and word of mouth, it spreads, and it's a good little time killer.
Yeah, so what's the gameplay like? Just a quick introduction.
I mean, just think of any sort of card game you've ever played. It's turn-based. You have 30 hit points, and the opposition obviously has the same, and the goal is to use monsters and power-ups to knock it all the way down to zero. And it, you know, it's just cartoonish, arcade-ish fun, but it's fun and addicting.
How has Pokemon not done this? It feels like that's natural stuff.
You know, I want to say I just read something about an electronic Pokemon card game, but I suppose if you want to play the card game online, you'll just go get Pokemon for the Game Boy. Yeah. So, which is what I did.
Yeah, no, that sounds about right. My number one was Grand Theft Auto 5. It's kind of cheating because it's a remastered game. But here's the thing. I don't even really like the first-person mode that much. What I loved is the multiplayer was well executed. You can do a lot of different game modes, from shooting, racing, you know, cruising around in planes. I thought that it's getting better. I have less issues of getting dropped. You know, the graphics are obviously really good with the Xbox One. I told you this when I first purchased it. I thought this was a next-gen game that they kind of crammed into an old-gen console. But in general, I really have trouble finding fault with it outside of, like I said, occasionally you get dropped from matches. Or, I mean, outside of that, it's really hard for me to find fault with it.
Yeah, you know, picked up as well. Left it off my list just because, you know, it was definitely my game of the year for 2013, yeah. But I wasn't counting the remastered stuff. I've been playing through the entire game in first person just to get the feel for it, and it completely changes it up. Just much more in your face, and I mean, it's Grand Theft Auto through and through, but they did a great job for a remastered game. I mean, there's new content of all sorts on the radio, side quests, guns, items, and the finding the peyote is fun.
That's really
funny.
Because
it just puts you on a drug trip. So.
Yeah, you could be like a hammerhead shark or like all sorts of different stuff.
They did a great job with it.
No, absolutely. And I think it's one of those things that doesn't get talked about much with Grand Theft Auto is that, yeah, it's hyper-violent, and yeah, there's a lot going on that's kind of messed up. But at the end of the day, they execute that game really well. And I think there's been a lot of games, kind of like True Crime or whatever, that have tried to mimic it and try to, you know, go above and beyond with the violence and all that stuff. But I think what Grand Theft Auto has going for it is that they made a great map. It's pretty easy to use. It's easy to introduce someone to it, and you can do so many different things. So I think that doesn't get talked as much about. But really, Rockstar has kind of nailed this game. They've kind of figured out how to do it and how to get that audience.
Yeah, and you know, one thing Rockstar does is every single game that they come out with, it's just top notch. Whether you agree with the content or not, I mean, look at Red Dead Redemption and Max Payne 3, and everything they do, they give it their best. And I hear that we're going to be, just the rumor mill here, but hearing about some Red Dead Redemption 2 coming
soon.
That'd
be awesome. Yeah, that was one of my favorite games from last gen. Going from games we liked to the biggest disappointments, I'm going to throw this out there. First of all, I bought Destiny, $60. I was really hyped about it. We had played the beta. I think this is one of those things where it was probably too much hype. And for some people, I really don't understand how someone can play 400 hours of a game and say they don't like it. But this one really has some controversy. You either love it or you hate it.
Yeah, you know, it's at the top of my biggest disappointments list as well. My two are Destiny and Unity. And Unity, at least, there's a lot of content. Even if it's broken, it can get fixed and you can keep playing it. But Destiny's problems now are there, you know, once you beat everything in the game, it's pretty empty and it becomes a grind. And to the game's credit, it is very well done. It's tight shooting. It's addicting. I keep going back to it. I'm not at the level cap yet, but as far as the DLC, I eventually plan exploring it, but now that the first DLC is released, they have a barrier to entry. People have to pay if they want to continue on. And the biggest complaint that I would play the game so much more if they just put matchmaking in for the raid and for you know, some of the Nightfall stuff, because right now you have to go to third-party sites and find people to play with. And over again, Bungie was saying that, you know, you're going to have to do it with your friends. There's going to need to be six of you. You'll have to be at the top of your game, and you need to coordinate. Well, then you have people beating these raids alone. They're soloing it, or they're just finding a couple people online that they don't even know to play with. And it's like, you know, just give us the option and let the players decide.
Yeah, I mean, they did get critical mass to play it. I think they advertised well. I mean, they did get people to purchase the game. The problem I have is, like I said, I just, as an Xbox guy, I know I'm not getting the PS3 stuff, or PS4 stuff, rather. And I just think that I like storylines. I do like the competitive nature of games, obviously. But the problem I had with this, like I said, is it felt empty. Once I had done everything, I'm like, I'm not going to keep on playing that same level over and over again.
Yeah, and you know, with Destiny, they've said it's a 10-year experiment, and whether that's in the form of new games or just expansion after expansion, we'll see what they end up doing with it.
Anything else?
Yeah, just a couple quick other disappointments. Obviously, there was Unity, but and these games came out early 2014, but Watch Dogs, that was a super hyped game, and you know, just low on content and just not a whole lot going on with it. And the story wasn't terribly gripping. We'll see if that's a series that they stick with and continue on. And you know, that is about it. The two highlights that I can, or three highlights that I can think of.
Yeah, absolutely. In our next segment, we'll talk microtransactions and the pros and cons of them. All right, Max and I welcome you back, and we're going to be talking about microtransactions. And I think the reason you actually had texted me and said, hey, check out this article, is from back in November, written on Kotaku by Ethan Levy. And it was basically a guy who spent $100 in Assassin's Creed Unity, and he says so that you didn't have to. And I think we talk a lot about microtransactions. For me personally, as long as it's not a paywall, I'm fine with it. It's nice that you can kind of buy extra stuff if you want to invest money into a game. But I thought this was just interesting, just that this guy did his homework. He looked it up and he said, you know, like, a $60 game prices really haven't gone up too much since 2006, is the equivalent of $51 in 2006. And obviously we know with, you know, more horsepower with these new systems and whatnot, games probably take longer to develop. They have to get the graphics down. They have to have the storyline. There's a lot of different narratives, obviously, in most of these games, as we discussed early in the podcast, but I understand that these guys have to make money and this is a business. At the end of the day, though, I want to be able to purchase a $60 game and know that I've got a full game, even if I'm and then I'm willing to, you know, invest more money in it, I guess.
Yeah, and the thing is that DLC and microtransactions are here to stay. And it all started with the infamous horse armor in Oblivion. And to be honest, I bought Oblivion day one, and I love that game. I bought a 360 for it, played the crap out of it. And I didn't think twice when horse armor became available. I bought every piece of DLC for that game. But, you know, microtransactions and DLC have mutated now to the extent where, you know, the point of this article is that Assassin's Creed Unity has all these tiny microtransactions. You need a companion app. There's a new website called Assassin's Creed Initiates, and it's all just extra stuff to get people wrapped into the game and spending more money. And at the end of the day, you know, like for Initiates, for example, all that does is it opens more chests on the map. And what drives people to, you know, invest in this stuff is that completionists, like myself, if I like a game, I like to 100% it. They just scatter these chests in obvious places all over the map, and you get to it, and a little pop-up opens up. And it's like, you know, if you want to open this, you need a companion app. And then the companion app has timed walls that, you know, to do missions. Think Black Flag, where you sent your crew out on missions, and it was timed, and then you'd come back and it'd be complete.
Dragon Age has this a little bit.
Exactly,
too.
Exactly. The war map. But now with this, you have only so many slots, and if you want to open more slots for more assassins, you have to pay to be able to do that. And, you know, it's geared for a very specific part of the audience. But, you know, for those not interested, and this article makes the point, is let us turn the option off. If you know you're never going to spend the money, get it off the map and just out of sight. And it's disruptive and totally brings you out of that game world.
I think the game that did it well, and I go back to Grand Theft Auto, my number one game in the last segment, they allow you to go and buy a plane if you want to. I think it'd be really difficult to get a plane or a limo or something like that if you don't invest additional money into it. But
hold on. Now we got the heist finally coming. Yeah. So we'll see how much you can actually earn from that. But continue.
Yeah. And so I think that the deal with that is, the heist thing was frustrating. It was frustrating. Their launch was not very good. It was a bummer getting knocked out of games and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, in terms of money, if you look at straight value, it was a $60 value game, even with just the one player. The online was well executed. And then I think that, I mean, I essentially invested $120 in that game, if you want to think about it that way. But I was willing to do that because I didn't have to buy each kind of new thing, the beach party or whatever it was, or the, I'm trying to think, they had a Christmas special. I mean, they've done a lot of different things. And because I wasn't making a purchase each time I was doing that, I was pretty comfortable with investing, again, $120 into a Rockstar game. And I think that it's not a paywall, right? I was able to play with you even if, you know, you didn't invest more money into it. And we talked about this with Destiny and with other games. It's difficult when your friends are playing a game, they've invested more money into it, and you're saying, hey, I'm not as into it, and I can't play with you guys anymore.
Right, and some games... this is going to be around to stay, so it's just a matter of how they go about doing it. Some games are great about it. What Destiny could do, the simplest fix to this problem, is let people that don't have the content play it with just those that do. So if someone has purchased it, then they access it or make it accessible to everyone that is in that party, just because, you know, Borderlands did this. You could play with anyone that had all the DLC, you could join them in it. You wouldn't be able to play it unless you were playing online with them.
Hydro Thunder, I mean, a weird $10 game, but they allowed you to do that as well.
Right. And then, you know, there's an absolutely wrong way to do about it. So, you know, the title of the article, I spent $100 in Assassin's Creed Unity, so you wouldn't have to. Well, the most expensive package in the game for Helix credits is $100. Now, what the Helix credits do is they let you basically level up faster by getting gear that you don't have the money for, upgrading the gear that you don't have the money for, or just, you know, upgrading and unlocking things. Well, you know, he played through the whole game, upgraded everything he needed to, and maxed it all out, and he still has $56 worth of Helix credits left over. And, you know, it's, you can't redeem this for anything. You can't put it towards a season pass or any other sort of Ubisoft product. So, you know, they knew going in that this is what they were giving the consumer.
Yeah, exactly. And it just seems like if they did something wrong in the process, where they had to rush the game out, where maybe it got more expensive than they thought they would or something like that. But that's actually the most frustrating thing to me, that it's not that he spent $100 and got a whole bunch of stuff. He ended up with like $56 he couldn't spend. And it just seems like, again, they're kind of fleecing someone who's really into the game, which ultimately that hurts you in the long run, because it's what I was saying earlier. You know what I mean? I can go buy a $60 game, and yeah, you know what? If I don't get through it, they got $60 of my money, but I'm probably not buying the next game you come out with. And I think that on the flip side, sometimes if they give you a game for $10, $15, I'm going to play Fallout, you know, the next Fallout that comes out. I'm going to play the next Witcher that comes out, certainly the next BioShock that comes out. And so, like I said, I think that they're hurting a great system they had, where literally, like I said, I just blindly bought Assassin's Creed's games. Luckily, this one, I think 4 games came out, right? November 18th?
Yeah, you skipped this one in Far Cry. Yeah. I think you went with Dragon Age and
Grand Theft Auto. Yeah. And so, like I said, I'm happy with those purchases. Those are among my top 5. Yep. Probably going to go get Far Cry. Maybe not Assassin's Creed, and I, you know me. I probably wouldn't have said that years ago.
Yeah, I mean, I was the same way, and I stuck with, you know, 1, 2, and 3, and the whole Ezio trilogy. I played the extra games. I didn't go and purchase them, and they were fine, but to me, they've just been churning out the same thing over and over again. And then Black Flag was such this, you know, refreshing change, and I love the ship sailing and everything. It livened things up, and, you know, Ubisoft is a French company. You thought they'd do a really just polished game for, you know, their homeland and all this, and they just, you know, it was broken. And I think they were kind of falling into the Call of Duty trap where, you know, it's an analyzed series or annualized series. They got to rush it out. But, you know, on the contrary, Call of Duty Advanced Warfare, I haven't bought a Call of Duty game in years. And this one, I just on a whim went out and got it because I heard such great things. And it's fantastic. It's fun to play Call of Duty again.
Yeah, and certainly you can recover yourself, right? I mean, but I think it's a negative when you hurt your brand just because, like I said, maybe you screwed up something in development, maybe you went over budget, something like that. When you put that on the consumer, most consumers are smart enough to say, hey, I got, you know, a lot of entertainment options. I certainly have a lot of video game options, and
right.
certainly I don't want to invest $160 into a game and have $56 laying around.
And there were so many red flags with this. I mean, there was the sketchy review embargo where they couldn't be lifted until, I think, noon. But regardless, it couldn't – whenever it was, the reviews could not be released until – the game had been out for almost 12 hours, and, you know, that doesn't help anyone buying it at midnight or those first adopters. And, you know, another thing with the Assassin's Creed is that the next one, Assassin's Creed Victory, it's going to be set in Victorian London, and that's already gotten leaked, and it's set for probably, you know, the fall holiday season coming up in 2015 already. So you would hope, unless they're just completely oblivious to it or don't care, that, you know, they've heard what their audience has had to say, and they're gonna kind of follow up on that and just, you know, make sure it's a polished game that releases fixed.
Simply put, do you think you have to invest more money in this game to complete it, or is it one of those things where you could grind it out to get through the whole thing?
This isn't a game that you have to invest any money in to complete. There's a small amount of grinding. I mean, if you start right from the get-go and do the right missions, you can have your income maxed out right away, so you'll have money to afford everything you need to. The thing is, if you want to be a completionist, you definitely have to not invest money as much as a lot of time just doing the companion app, beating that, and then the initiates thing and all these challenges. And it's a lot of busy work and grinding for the sake of having content.
Do you believe the base price of games will go up? Do you think that you have to get to 70?
I think as soon as it hits 70, there's going to be a lot of pushback, and that's why we're sticking. Because, I mean, when it hit 60, people were not happy.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was concern with the next gen. Are they going to try it? And I think that having the base game at 60 and then the additional stuff for the hardcore base is the smart move right now. They just got to do it right, like, you know, some games are doing.
Well, and I think Fallout's a good example. Again, this, we're talking about a game from 2008, but it's a game that I picked up. You said, don't get the big one just yet with all the DLC. Just see if you like the base game. I did, and I'm still buying DLC for that game.
Right.
And again, I think that if you think over the long term, these games have value for a long time, right? Someone's going to be buying this, you know, whether it's Unity or Far Cry or whatever, they're going to be purchasing a game like this years from now, probably at the $10, $15 price point, or even $5 on a special or whatever. And I think you want DLC that's kind of timeless, that people are going to continue to pick up. So in my mind, I think if you're going to have your base game be 60 and you need to make a little more money than that, what you have to do is have good DLC. I mean, I think that's the bottom line with this.
No, that's right. And, you know, the better product you provide your audience with, they're going to keep coming back. And really, that's all there is to it. They just got to find a way to do it in a way that treats the consumer like an actual person, not just, you know, trying to dig into their wallets.
Yeah, ATM machine.
Right. Yep, yeah, exactly.
Anything else we got with microtransactions?
No, I mean, just pretty much it's time to accept that they're here to stay, and just, you know, if it's not right, and just speak out, and there's a lot of companies that'll listen and do it right.
So let's talk a little bit about what we want to look forward to in 2015, and maybe some honorable mentions, stuff we didn't talk about in the last segment.
Yeah, well, so right now, the next big game to come out is Dying Light. It's going to be Techland's second attempt at, well, I guess third, depending on how you look at what they've done, but attempt at a zombie game. It's coming out on the 27th, and it's kind of like Dead Island 2, but then after they announced Dying Light, they announced Dead Island 2. So just open world zombie fun with a focus on parkour, and maybe it'll be like Assassin's Creed Zombies. We'll see.
Capitalizing on survival horror and then people like zombie games.
It's hard to go wrong. But until then, it's kind of a bit of a dry spell. So if you're looking for some fun stuff to hit up, there's a couple honorable mentions from 2014 that we didn't really touch on. Smash Bros. Made a comeback.
Yeah.
Obviously got to have a Wii U for that or a 3DS. Both versions are fantastic. If you're looking for some RPG action, Divinity Original Sin kind of went back to the roots of old school RPG turn-based gameplay, and that's going to be on the PC. The Swapper, which is a sci-fi little puzzle game, also PC. Civilization Beyond Earth, if you like your strategy games, it's a fantastic little twist, and they're actually announcing a little spaceship simulation game that's going to be coming out as a companion to that in the near future. And, yeah, like I said, Call of Duty, Advanced Warfare, if you're looking to run and gun, that's a good spot to do it.
Divinity, and I know there's other games, have been funded through Kickstarter, like partially. Do you think, along the microtransaction topic, do you think that this is a way for someone who's new, kind of breaking in, to allow themselves to put out a game at the $60 price point, kind of without fleecing the
people? Yeah, and a lot of these Kickstarter games, I think Divinity was $40, and Steam is fantastic because if you can hold off just a few months, there's going to be a holiday sale or a season sale, and you can find this stuff for serious discounts. And, you know, hopefully with everything going digital on the consoles, it'll eventually get there. And you're starting to slowly see it happen like that. But, yeah, for the indie developers and everything like that, it's a good way for them to kind of see what the interest in their product is. And if it gets funded, obviously, they got the money and there's going to be some buyers. It's definitely here to stay. And you also see big developers, well, big names from big developers leaving to hit the Kickstarter and indie scene. So,
anything else for this week's episode?
Yeah, just maybe some titles to look forward to in 2015. We can rattle some of those off.
Yep.
Hotline Miami 2 is one of my tops that I'm
looking forward to.
I don't know what it was.
You put up a picture. Yeah.
Yeah, I spent $20 on a pink rooster poster from the game.
I was just like, what the hell was that?
And then $100 on a frame to put it up on the wall. So that was, yeah, whatever it was about the first one, it stuck with me. It was just fun. And, you know, it's violent and dark and messed up, but it's
old school.
Yeah, it's just it's fun, and it's a little trippy. Think Drive, the movie with Ryan Gosling.
Yep.
The only Ryan Gosling movie I'm a big fan of. But yeah, I mean, Evolve, that's another one that's getting some attention right now. They're getting, you know, under fire with their DLC and microtransactions already, and having to pay for characters and new creatures and maps, and so we'll see what happens with that. But my top games, Arkham Knight, Halo 5, we can expect to hear some Mass Effect news.
I'm thrilled
Dragon
about
Age
that
is
one.
Out. Yeah, it's going to be good. And hopefully some Fallout news. But
that's another one I'm looking for. Yeah, and what's the game where you go into the world and you try to get close to the sun? What's the PlayStation game? Man's Sky.
Yeah,
that's another intriguing
one. That'll buy a PlayStation 4 for. Right now, though, I did go for Elite Dangerous and get a flight stick and all that stuff.
Really?
And it's a good space sim. It's cool to see that making a resurgence. We've kind of been neglecting the PS4, getting into that in the near future, but Uncharted 4 is coming out, Order 1886. I really want to get my hands on the remastered Last of Us, so that's gotten some great reviews.
Yeah.
Witcher 3, obviously.
I'm thrilled about that one. I want to see that
It's going to be good. But, yeah, I mean, there's so many games coming out in 2015, and it's going to be fun, because now that the consoles are out and everyone's got their place, you know, it's all about the games, and you got, just to rattle off a bunch quick, it's Mortal Kombat X is coming out, there's a Mad Max, a Drift, which is just a space simulation game, Banner Saga 2, some indie games like Below, The Division, Dead Island 2, some Starship Fighters like Dreadnought. New Zelda game, finally. It's going to be on the U. And the biggest one that people are forgetting about is Battlefront 3. I think that's going to be where all the fun's at once DICE. Well, hopefully it launches better than Battlefield 4 does.
Yeah.
But, yeah. And then, of course, King's Quest is getting a reboot. So that's pretty exciting.
Yeah. So a lot to look forward to. Obviously, we'll keep up with it on the podcast. Any final word? Anything else?
I think that's about it. Any ideas on what we're looking to cover for the next one?
I don't know. We'll have to look forward to it in the next one. I haven't come up with any topics yet. I think the one thing we may do sooner than later is just best or last gen games, just because I think we can honestly say that's last gen at this point.
Oh, no, it absolutely is. There isn't a whole lot coming out for it. They're doing a good job of easing them out, though. I mean, they're still supporting it. Still some games coming out for it. I mean, Borderlands, the pre-sequel, totally new game just for that. Well, at the time, just for that. Now it's coming out for the new system. So.
Yeah, exactly. So I think we'll look forward to that and then think of some new topics, and we'll have some good stuff for you next week.
All right, we'll see you then.
Yeah, this has been 105 The Tickets Video Game Podcast from Cold Omaha. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back.